Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest and greatest episode of Inside the Hexagon. I am your host, as always, Phil Landides, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join us for today's show. On the episode today, we have the man himself, UFC Strikeforce MMA legend Kung Lee. I'm so glad Kung was able to join us. It was great to reconnect with him after all these years, and he was generous with his time and his insight. We talk about his transition from kickboxing into MMA. We talk about his early days in Strikeforce, and then we really key in on his title-winning fight against Frank Shamrock, which we covered on last week's episode, but he delves into the details surrounding that fight and some of the real intricacies, and it was great to get his insight. I'm really appreciative of him delving into all that and sharing it with us. We also talk about transitioning into the UFC, as well as his class action lawsuit against that organization. We also talk about Scott Coker a little bit. So there's a lot that we get into his movie career. There's so much to get to. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right, on the line with us, joining us for today's show is former UFC and Strikeforce star Kung Lee. Kung, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good to reconnect with you. Been a long time, but I'm glad to jump on the line with you. So if you're ready, let's jump right in.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So I want to go back to the beginning of your career, specifically focusing on your transition from kickboxing into MMA. And I'm not sure if you know this, but I'm sure you probably don't remember this, but I actually was there in person for the very last Strikeforce kickboxing event, which you main evented. I think you fought Brian Ebersole, if I remember correctly, but I was there that night. I was the only journalist, so to speak, although I was just a production assistant, but I was the only one that was there. I remember Ernie Reyes Jr. was there. Jerry Rice was there. And they had this announcement on the program about Shamrock versus Gracie MMA coming to San Jose. And I was super excited about that. And then start hearing that, you know, Kung Lee, and I was definitely familiar with your name. He's going to be part of that card. So kind of take us back to that time. We interviewed Javier Mendez. He told the story on this podcast of running into you at a chiropractor's office over on Meridian Avenue in San Jose and discussing you transitioning into MMA from kickboxing. So is that how you remember it? What made you want to move on to this new sport after having such success in Sanxiao and kickboxing?
Well, first, I can't remember the order, right? I know Javier was telling me you've done everything that you could do in the Sanda type kickboxing. You know, it's time to give MMA a try. You should really do it. I can talk to Scott. And I said, well, Scott's my good friend too. So I think between Javier Mendez and Scott Coker, they talked me into doing MMA. And so I started training at Javier's gym, AKA. And then, I guess the rest is history, you know?
Did you have Ush at that point, or was that, did you kind of branch that out of AKA after a while?
I had my own gym called, just Kung Lee's Martial Arts. And then I was training over at AKA, and eventually I took on the name AKA for a bit. And then I started doing a lot of movies, and I just, said, I got to pick, because I'm fighting and doing movies and running a gym. I couldn't manage all three at once. So I just ended up dropping the gym and focusing, after my fight career on just the movies.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. All right. Well, let's jump back again. But you fought pretty often early on in your Strikeforce career. You progressed pretty nicely, it appeared. Did you feel that you were going at the right pace? Was it the right opponents? And did you feel good about your development? Did you want to go faster? Did you want to go slower? How do you feel about how that went early on?
I just actually let my camp handle it. If they want me to fight three times a year, I would fight three times a year. If they want me to fight once or twice or whatever. I fought a lot up until after I won the title, then, I started getting hit up a lot, in the Hollywood area. So I figured I couldn't fight forever. So I had to take advantage of the opportunities. It wasn't like them having me to come out to meet them and just to talk to them about a movie career. They're offering me parts. So, I jumped on, that, train and, left fighting for 18 months.
Yeah. And we're going to get to that. That was after the Frank fight, but The Tony Fricklin fight, I think had to be a really important kind of milestone or marker in your career. It was the first MMA bout of yours to go past the first round. How important was that to your development as a fighter kind of going into the deeper waters?
Javier told me before the fight, Tony's a season that, pick and choose your shots and, make him fight your fight. So that's kind of what I did, and he was tough. He didn't go down. Like I remember him, Tony went down, I believe in the first round with a check hook. Cause I was catching him a lot with the kicks. And then, and in the second round, he was trying to turn up the pace and trying to, force me into up against the cage, but my footwork was really good. So I just, I felt like, just stick to the game plan, stick to what Javier says, pick him apart, and then when the opportunity is there, never look for the knockout, but when the opportunity is there, knock him out.
Yeah. You hit him with a little right hand, and he went right down. And as I was watching the fight not long ago, I wanted to yell at him to shoot in for a takedown or something. Cause you were just killing him on the feet and he just never did. But it was definitely a very good fight for you. But once you got that win over Fricklin, a potential matchup with Frank Shamrock really began to be openly discussed. You joined commentary at the first Playboy Mansion show, and you and Frank had, a little funny back and forth there. And obviously there was a lot of respect between the two of you after you beat Sammy Morgan. It's kind of weird. Like you kind of sort of challenged him, but it was more, he kind of challenged himself on your behalf after the fight. But you made it clear that this was just, respect and that sort of thing. But was there anywhere that you felt like Frank had you beat going into the fight? Was there anything you trained for specifically as far as facing a legend like Frank Shamrock?
No, I think then, I had nothing to lose, and confidence was on my side. Against Sammy Morgan, I started having some elbow issues, and I mentioned it to Scott, after my fight I was going to get surgery on my elbow. And then I felt like I didn't expect Frank to kind of call me out after my fight. Obviously I went three rounds, and I just 2 weeks before that I came back from a 2 week film shoot with Channing Tatum, and I didn't expect to shoot that long. I thought I was just gonna go over there for 3 days and just shoot a quick fight scene, but they wanted to expand my part and make the fight bigger and make it more dynamic. So I ended up being over there for 2 weeks, and I didn't have anyone to train me, so I was just shadow boxing in my hotel room doing cardio. Then when I came back 2 weeks later, I fought. So I felt like, winded really bad. And when I came back the 1 week where I got a chance to train hard, Javier's all, what happened? I'm all, it was like, what they did was they the last week I was in New York, they changed the time to everything was filmed at night. So my clock was completely off. We filmed all night long. And, then during the day I couldn't sleep. Then by the time I got back, I was so tired. And then, I came in for training, and then I remember me and a couple guys, Javier brought over to just help, help me train. I was like, I felt winded, and then it carried over to the Sammy Morgan fight. And then I think Frank was like, I got this, so
he saw an opportunity.
Yeah. And then, I couldn't believe the fact that it would happen again, because, I would have never taken the role. The fight against Frank was, definitely number one on the list. But then, I auditioned for martial law for the movie Tekken, and just because that was like my favorite game. But I didn't expect them to keep pushing the date. Then 3.5 weeks before, 3.5 weeks before the fight was when they said I would finish, right? But I told them you have to shorten up the weeks. I can only go out there for 1 week. So they did it. And they rushed the fight scene, and it didn't turn up like that. Was like one of my worst fight, in the film world, being martial law. And I was upset about that, but the fight against Frank Shamrock was way more important. So I was just like, even though, the fight coordinators, didn't understand the game, or they didn't play the character enough, and they were having, the other character Jin do like martial laws move. But you know, for me, I just take direction in the film. I'm not gonna try to, you know, step on any toes. So I did what they asked me to do. I got back. I had 21 stitches because, you know, the lead actor clipped me in the mouth and gave me 21 stitches. Okay. When I came back, I was actually that week that I took to go film that that part for martial law really helped me because I was already training so hard. My cardio was like, I felt like if I didn't have that week, I would have peaked too early for the Frank Shamrock fight. And, you know, it actually worked out great. I wasn't even tired at all going into the third round and we were like exchanging. So, you know, Frank clipped me with some good shots, rocked me a little bit, but like, I felt like I was in such good shape that I was able to weather the storm.
Yeah, you actually kind of answered a bit of a mystery my co-host and I had kind of discussed. Was you did look pretty winded in the after the Sam Morgan fight, despite the fact that you really dominated that fight. So I now we know why, and it makes sense. And Frank kind of stepping up afterwards when he's supposed to be more of a broadcast commentator and kind of taking that time to kind of call you out was a little surprising to us as well. But now I understand it makes more sense. In your training for the fight, did you, it sounds like you didn't have a lot of time to really as much time as you normally would, but you did have Javier Mendez in your corner who had previously been Frank's trainer. Do you feel like that gave you any sort of advantage? Did you, did he kind of give you any knowledge based on his training with Frank previously, or was it just got to train for Frank and there wasn't really anything special as far as the training goes, having Javier?
Well, one thing, that Javier really helped is like, you know, expect the unexpected, right? He says Frank's a legend because he's defeated a lot of great fighters and he adapts well to each style. You know, he's fought some really good stand-up guys. He's fought some really strong guys. He's fought some strong wrestlers. He's fought a variety of different kind of fighters. So I can't underestimate him. I just got to go in there and, you know, fight my fight. And like usually when I fight my fight, I do very well. And I just remember in the first round I tried to do a wheel kick. Frank came underneath of it, bumped me over, tried to put a guillotine choke on me. And I remember coming back to the corner and Javier was a little bit upset. He's like, I told you no wheel kicks, no spin stuff. And I'm because it was so loud, I was like, I didn't hear you. You know, he's like, no, we talked back in the locker room. Come on, okay, sorry. You know, so I kind of tone a different tempo into the second round, and then Javier's pick him apart. Your punches and your kicks are too accurate. If you apply them, you're gonna hit. Something's gonna connect, and he's gonna feel it, and then. And if he can't weather the storm, then you can open up and do your fancy stuff, but no more fancy stuff. So I just stayed on the kicks, strikes and angles. And then if he did get me down, scramble to get up.
Yeah. So did you, I mean, it sounds like you weren't surprised then because Javier told you to expect the unexpected, but Frank stood with you. I mean, Frank in the Baroni fight, his knee was blown out, so he couldn't shoot. So he did have to stand up with a stand up guy. But in your fight, I was really surprised that he chose to stand with you. Despite what Javier said, did it surprise you that Frank stood with you as much as he did?
Well, you know, like everyone says, they're injured before the fight and they try to make an excuse. But like I watched Mike's training with Goldberg, right? And because Goldberg came over to my gym and the stuff that he was doing. And then, I also had some friends that was training because Frank took on like this gym owner. She was like a physical therapist also. So she, you know, like she got upset because I moved out of her gym and I opened up my gym. So I had a couple, guys over there told me that, you know, Frank's training fine. They didn't see anything wrong with his knee. You know, he was all, you know, he was bending it and he was like doing all kinds of, you know, groundwork. And, you know, so what people don't realize is I'm a high school All-American wrestler. I wrestled since the time I was in seventh grade. I went to the AU Nationals in seventh grade. I went to the AU Nationals in eighth grade and actually took second in Greco-Roman and second in freestyle. And then as a freshman, you know, I wrestled year round, you know, and wrestled hundreds of matches. So, you know, every year. So it wasn't like, you know, I would go in and Frank can easily take me down, because he was already having a hard time taking me down when we trained together. You know, I probably gave up one or two takedowns, and that's because I threw him and he rolled me, you know? So I knew that I was going to try to pick him up and slam him or hip throw him or anything. Cause then you get into these scrambles, and Frank's amazing at the scrambles. So I just made sure that, you know, if he knocks me down, my job's to get right back up and fight the knee bars and ankle locks, you know? So that's what I prepared for. And, you know, I think with the impact that Frank was receiving from my kicks and my punches and my movement, it was hard for him to gauge a takedown on me.
Well, he said in his post-fight interview that he actually thought you cracked his arm in the first with a kick, that cracked a bone in his arm, and then you completely broke it in the second. So you mentioned in the first round, it didn't sound like you realized that you had damaged his arm like that in the first round. So did you realize that you'd broken his arm? Were you zoning in on that?
Well, you know, in the first round, when I kicked the arm, I knew I hurt his arm, but I didn't think I broke it or had a fracture or whatever. So I knew he liked to block, like if I was throwing a hook or a punch at him, and he would roll and slip with one arm. And then, but he was doing that when I was kicking. So I was like, ooh, you know, I know how hard my kicks are. You know, I used to mess around and break 2x4s, but you know, yeah, I'm just going to keep kicking at his arm. And then I know that he shook his arm out a few different times during the fight. And so I told myself, just aim at his head. He's got to block the kick, you know? So then I was going from the body to the head, the body to the head. And I didn't want to kick low too much so he couldn't get that takedown. But, you know, like, you know, we worked a lot where if someone grabbed your leg after a kick, they already took the blunt force of the kick. So all I had to do is turn my hips and kick out and, you know, get away. Sure, I'm going to expose my back, but at the same time, when I kick out, I'm going to jam him with, you know, these mill legs of mine, you know. And so I was very confident that I wasn't worried about being taken down, except when I did that wheel kick and he ducked underneath of it and kind of like bumped me, and I flew in the air and I landed. And next thing I saw I felt his arm go around my neck, and I grabbed the wrist right away, and I peeled it off right away, you know, and I stood right back up. And then he smiled and I smiled back, you know?
Yeah, he was on you like white on rice. He was all over you with that. So, well, obviously a massive win. The fight did very well at the gate, over 16,000 tickets sold. It was the best attended Strikeforce event since the initial Shamrock versus Gracie event, gate of almost $1.2 million. What did, looking back now, what did that fight do for your career? Did you see this title win as a passing of the torch in Strikeforce?
It wasn't more like the passing the torch, because we are both the same age at the time. I just felt that, you know, because he broke his arm. Well, I broke his arm and it was such a bad break. I knew that if he did ever come back, you know, sometimes you're not the same when you break the bone that way, you know? So I didn't know. I never thought about, you know, like passing the torch. I usually believe that I create my own path with my faith in God and the journey that he wants me to go down, that he has in store for me, you know? So, you know, it's like, you know, back then I used to think a lot, oh, it's my plan. I got to plan this. I can plan that. But in the end, you know, throughout my MMA career and as it goes on, like when I suffered my first loss, I realized, okay, you know, I understand, you know, you can make plans. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. You just got to keep on the path and figure out what, you know, kind of what God wants you to do. So how he wants you to learn, you know, so
well, that's it. Yeah, let's get into the rest of your career. Just a few more questions and I'll let you go. You didn't fight again for well over a year after this fight. You relinquished the Strikeforce title, and this was due to movie projects. Like you said, you had a lot of opportunities and offers on the table. Eventually, you come back, you face Scott Smith, you lose for the very first time, as you just mentioned. You did get that loss, and you did get it back, and you rebounded, and you got one more win before heading into the UFC. You lose to Wanderlei Silva in your octagon debut in a fight of the night performance before winning two straight, including a vicious knockout of Rich Franklin. I got two questions on this. Looking back at all the victories specific to your MMA career, not including your kickboxing career, but specific to your MMA career, is the Frank Shamrock win, is that the signature win of your career? And then once you answer that, I've got one more follow-up question on that.
I believe against Frank Shamrock, that is my signature win of my career, yeah.
Okay. And then this is something my co-host had mentioned to me, and I thought it was interesting, but you know, you mentioned you and Frank being the same age, and you obviously started in MMA. You'd been involved in kickboxing and obviously had a very decorated amateur wrestling career, but you've been involved obviously in combat sports for a long time before you got into MMA. Do you, you know, you're talking about God's plan for your life and that sort of thing, but do you feel like you came into the sport, you know, 10 years too late? Do you think if you'd started earlier, if MMA had been a thing really earlier, that you would have gone a lot farther with it? Are you happy with the way that it turned out? And it is what it is.
You know, I really don't look back. A lot of people ask me that question, and I tend, when I do look back, it stops me from looking forward. Right. So, it happened the way it did. Unless there's some, you know, if you know of any, like, you know, time travelers, I'll go back in time and I'll make some changes, but
the only one I know is Marty McFly, and I think he's retired. So
yeah, so I look at my career as I've been blessed with a career, and I was able to fight, and I was able to enjoy both Strikeforce and UFC, and the competition in both. And as you know, I mean, Strikeforce, the competition was just as good as UFC, because look at how many champions that are, like, you know, considered like almost like a GOAT from Strikeforce going into you know, UFC. Strikeforce, you know, developed, you know, DC,
yeah,
you know,
Ronda Rockhold, Ronda Rousey,
So, you know, Scott Coker, he's one of those promoters that, you know, he comes from a martial arts background, and you know, he puts his heart and soul into it, but at the same time, he has that, you know, he cares about the fighters, you know.
Absolutely. And,
so that's I think that's the big difference when it's a small fight promotion, but with really, really high level fighters. But and it was growing. That's why UFC took a threat to them and they bought him out.
Yeah. You know? So yeah, I obviously wish they were still around. I think a lot of fans do. I got two more questions, but before I ask those, anything you want to mention in terms of projects or anything that you've got coming up? I know you're on Instagram and Twitter at KungLee185. Anything you want to mention that's going to be coming out soon?
Well, you know, I mean, I took a little long break, you know, with I went through a divorce and then focusing on my sons, you know, especially my middle son. You know, and then with the case of, you know, MMAFA trying to get the Ollie Act from boxing to MMA. And then, you know, the class action, I'm representing 1,200 fighters, over 1,200 fighters in the UFC, you know, for a fair market, you know, and a few other things on that. So, you know, I took a step back. I could have continued to make, fight and make money, but I didn't. And I did some TV projects with my friend Daniel Wu, like Into the Badlands. I've done a few movies, and I just, in the last probably year and a half, I just kind of focus on my family and my son and myself, and trying to, you know, make myself more as a, you know, just to heal up and be more of a complete father, you know, friend, and, you know, now that I'm married again, you know, husband, you know. So, you know, I think it's time to start rolling things again, and, you know, see what happens when, you know, I produce my own films, get some money behind me from Vietnam and some other investors and see what happens, you know?
Okay.
Without, awesome. Yeah.
All right. Well, two more questions. I've talked about this with some other folks and other journalists and that sort of thing. And your name has been mentioned several times, but so feel free to say yourself based on your career, but if you think it's somebody else, let us know. But if there is one fighter that really embodies Strikeforce, who really comes to mind? Like, who represents Strikeforce in your mind when you think about your time there?
Besides myself?
Yeah, you can say yourself, honestly, if you think it's you, because, you know, you really, that's where you got your start. But there's other guys that also have, you know, kind of had similar careers. If it's you, no problem. But I'm curious who comes to mind.
I think the other person would have to, I would have to say DC.
It's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's where he got his start and made his bones and all of that. And there's, you know, again, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but there's guys that have made the transition from Strikeforce to UFC or Bellator and have gone on to, you know, or held gold in both promotions. And so many, Amanda Nunes got her, you know, really got her start there. There's a lot of fighters that really got their start there. And you got to give a lot of credit to Coker and, you know, Rich Chow and guys like that spotted that talent and built them up. So,
yeah. Yeah. See, I mean, like you just mentioned a whole bunch of names, you know, and, you know, I forgot about Amanda, you know? It's a long list. Yeah. So, and you know, and I feel blessed, you know, being part of Strikeforce and going to the UFC and then right away, you know, being co-main events or main events, you know, and headlining big shows and even selling out shows in Asia, you know, I've been blessed.
Absolutely. And well-deserved. All right. Well, one more question before I let you go. At the end of the day, Strikeforce and Scott Coker really gave you your start in MMA. So what does Strikeforce mean to Kung Lee?
Strikeforce means my beginning in MMA and a lot of good friends and a lot of good fighters, and it embodies a big part of why I am part of the, you know, the class action lawsuit against UFC.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Kung, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us on Inside the Hexagon, and I appreciate it. Much respect to you for all your accomplishments within the sport of MMA and what you're doing now. Much, much respect, and God bless.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the interview, and I'll talk to you hopefully in the future.
All right, I want to thank my very special guest, Kung Lee, for joining us for today's episode. I really appreciate, again, him taking the time to join us, and I hope that you enjoyed the episode as well. Hope that you're also enjoying the other episodes that we're doing. Looking ahead, we're going to be covering Strikeforce Melendez versus Thompson. This is the long-awaited Strikeforce lightweight title match between the champion, Gilbert El Nino Melendez, and the challenger, Josh the Punk Thompson. This fight at that point had been brewing for quite a while. We finally get to it. I'm looking forward to covering that. After that, I'm going to be honest with you. We're still working on our guests. We're going to see who we're able to lock down for that, but we are still working on that. So stay tuned for more information there. But there's lots of really cool stuff that's coming down the pipeline. So I hope that you have subscribed to us wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening to this, you can subscribe to us. You can also find us on social media at Inside the Hexagon Pod. On both Twitter and on Instagram. And you can reach me at phil@insidethehexagon.com. Would really love to get your direct feedback. What do you think about the show? Things that you would like to see, people you'd like to see on the show. Would love to hear from you. So please do reach out. And also please remember, if you have not already, to rate and review the show. If you feel like we deserve it, we'd love to get a 5-star rating from you. It helps others find the show. But we really appreciate all the support, all the feedback that we're getting. And we hope that continues. We can continue to deliver the content that you want to hear. But with that, we're going to go ahead and ride off into the sunset. Hope that you stay safe and you stay healthy, and we'll see you soon.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.